Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International. The Tarot trainers are experts in helping you and your business to achieve, lead, and outclass in every situation. Learn more at tero.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business, the News Hour. Grateful that you have tuned in yet again today. My guest is Robert Lewis. Robert Lewis goes by the nickname of Louis, and he is a founder of a company called Quester. It is an Iowa company, and we're going to let him explain what that is and what the genesis of this is, because this is a riveting conversation that has to do with technology, branding, and consumers. And I think you're going to find this incredible. Louis, welcome to the Business News Hour. Good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you inviting us to be here.
All right.
I will clarify one thing.
Yes.
I am not the founder of the company.
Ah.
I bought the company in 2005 after I came in 2004, and the company had been in business before that since 1973 approximately.
Wow.
Doing market research, the old standard way, focus groups, phone calls, group situations, but I came on board at the request of a bank in 2004 and got things fixed up and turned around, and then ended up buying the company with two other individuals in 2005.
Got it. All right. So I stand corrected. I've known you for a while, and I just was under the impression you had founded this company. So at its very root, Louis, what is Quester? What do you do?
We are a market research firm that is constantly on the quest, if you will, for answers for our Fortune 500 and 100 clients. We do market research. We did it the old way until 2007, 2008 with focus groups, but there had been an artificial component that had been developed. And in 2003, Campbell's hired us to do our first project with strictly artificial intelligence, where we would program the study and then the computer would take it from there, interviewing the individuals, and then we would take all of that paperwork and the interviews, and then use people again to ascertain keywords and key phrases. And I took a huge leap of faith before the 2008 recession, or during that time, to go strictly artificial intelligence. So we are now about 99% artificial intelligence. We have some of our regular clients ask us periodically to do focus groups, which we will do. But whenever there's a client that has a problem issue or they're trying to develop a product to a larger extent than it's already doing, that's when we get involved and they ask us to help them figure out what they should do from a marketing standpoint.
So what the consumer tends to share with you relative to whatever that product or service is, that then gets fed back to your people and to your client, Fortune 500 or Fortune 100 company, and then they make a determination based on consumer input. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely correct.
Yeah. All right. There is a lot to unpack there, Louis. I've been involved in the marketing and advertising business for my entire life almost, and I am well aware of the old way in which we used to do focus groups. And that can be sometimes problematic because if you have a strong leader in a focus group, that person's opinion can completely skew the rest of the audience. Would that be accurate?
I'm not a market researcher per se. I'm a numbers guy.
Right.
But you're preaching to the choir there. Yeah. That's what I've been saying forever. You got that alpha person who sways everybody in the group.
All right.
With the computer and the artificial intelligence, it's a one-on-one situation. It's their words, and it's them alone thinking through the process.
Do the subjects that you're asking these questions of, are they aware that they're speaking to a computer?
Yes, at some level. We have had a tremendous amount of respondents who forget that and then just start rambling and having a conversation. And then one of the big things that's hilarious, if you will, is that a lot of the respondents will try to mess the computer up.
Really? Okay?
Which you can do pretty easily because it is a computer. And now we've got the capability when they start doing that, we can kick them out.
Well, all right. I don't want to know any trade secrets here, Louis, but I think this is fabulous for businesses to understand. Because there's a seminar going on in Iowa this week, as a matter of fact, that talks about you must know your core audience in order to reach them with your product or service. Well, if you don't ask about your consumer group, the target audience, you don't know anything about what their predilections are with regard to what they like or what they don't like. How does Questor break through what has been traditionally a problem with regard to people either overthinking their answer or maybe leading it down the wrong path? How do you break that out for your clients?
We are very fortunate in that we have a tremendous amount of Fortune 100 clients, and we are consultative in nature, where they may not always like the approach we take as far as questions asked, okay? And I tell my people that, you know, you're probably not really doing your job until you've been fired two or three times, and then you know that you've gotten to the point where they're going to hire you back and move forward with something, but with uncomfortable questions, and we all need to know it.
Right. When you're doing this work for your clients, and I don't want you to disclose anything that you can't, but what are they mostly looking for? Are they mostly looking for acclimation for what they're already doing, or are they looking for the truth that says, yeah, your product or service really sucks, and we want some changes in that?
I'll give you two examples. We were fortunate enough to win the Explore Award. That's Explore without the E at the end. A few years ago, and I can actually give the name of the client, Samsung nominated us for that award. And they had a Black Friday that was not as nearly as good as they thought it should be. So they asked us through that next year to help them figure out what they should do to market their products better. And as you might guess, that's called Black Friday Report. And we were given credit by Samsung based on how we told them to approach the sales the next Thanksgiving. They gave us credit of 844% increase
in sales.
Oh, my
gosh.
I've been hesitant to use that number in the past couple, 3 years, but we've got it on our website now, and we can verify that. So it's just such a huge number.
That's a huge number.
It's a huge number. We turned their complete identity around over that. And, you know, I can say that they're still a client, but I can't talk about any of the other projects we work with. The other one was a company that had a product in the grocery store that you would readily recognize the name. They were getting ready to do away with that product because it was just not selling, okay? Kind of a funny name, kind of a funny product. It was a juice. And something very unusual, new on the market, and they asked us to get involved, and we repositioned it, rebranded it, and they ended up keeping the product, and you will now, when you go to the grocery store, it's still on the shelves.
Interesting. So a person's perception, a consumer's perception about a product or service really does define that brand, yes?
Yes.
And when you're working with these companies, and I think the Samsung story is amazing. I just want to come back to that for just a minute. If you're increasing somebody's sales on a certain specific event by over 800%, most companies would just be jumping over cars and happy if they had 5%. But when you're at that number, and if you can, what, I don't want to know exactly how they change that, but was their approach then more directed to the consumer in a way that the consumer could emotionally attach themselves to the product?
That was part of it.
Yeah.
And there was a whole lot more that went into it that I really can't talk about.
I imagine so.
But we repositioned pretty much everything that they did regarding their marketing.
It's fascinating.
And they bought
stuff
into it. We had a real unusual one a couple of years ago that came to us, and they had already been told by the ad agency how they should approach new products coming out in the next couple of years. And our approach was completely different. We came up with completely different ideas based on our respondents. And when I saw that, I thought it's going to take a big person in this company to recognize this and not
right
go away from us. We're not going to get this. Well, to her credit, she embraced us, admitted that she had been wrong, and they're now a regular client. They come to us all the time.
Now, when you're doing your work with Questor, Robert Lewis, ladies and gentlemen, is my guest. He goes by the nickname of Louis. When you're doing your work and you're presenting this to your clients, that is kind of a nifty thing, because your client may already have a predisposed idea as to their branding mechanism and their marketing efforts and all of these things, because, after all, it has gone through the marketing department and the R&I department and all of R&D, I'm sorry, the R&D department. Everything has been done. Do they then turn to you, or do they turn to you before they do all the work internally?
Both.
Yeah.
We get it both ways.
How often?
Sometimes we get it early on, and then other times we get it, you know, in that case, that consumer grocery store, probably 30, 40 things on the shelf from that company that I just talked about, way down the marketing line.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah.
And that's a costly experiment.
Oh, yes.
For when R&D and marketing and advertising and all that stuff is already, the branding work has already been done. And then you say, well, wait a minute, this is all positioned poorly. And they can tell because it's not selling. Whatever it is not
that's
selling.
Right. That's right.
So they got to find out why it's not selling. And that's where you come in. Because you're using AI in these focus groups, if you will, and these interviews with consumers, are you able to do a larger volume of input than what has been traditionally done?
Oh, yes. The record that we have in one 24-hour period was 5,000 interviews.
Oh, my.
Okay. We had one very large company, box store, come to us in the last part of November, wanting 7,000 respondents, 7,500 respondents. We were able to deliver the results the first part of February the next year. And if we were doing that with focus groups, it would have taken years upon years upon years.
Well, and let's break that down for just a moment, Louis. Many, many Gallup polls, other polls, I mean, we live in Iowa, for crying out loud, and we are awash in polls during this presidential cycle. And of course, the entire nation is awash in polls in 2020. The sampling that is done can be minuscule. I mean, making decisions based on what, 200, 300?
Can be.
Yeah.
And on the one where I mentioned 7,000, 7,500, there were many different segments to that study, but it was still 7,500 respondents. I would say that our average respondent size for a typical project, which is hard to say, there are no typical projects.
Of course not.
You take both sides of it out and leave the middle. I'm gonna say 300 to 500 respondents.
Okay.
Would be a normal.
Got it. So the people that work with you, Louis, here at Questor, give us a paint a brush of who you're working with in the back room where all this smart stuff is going on. Who are these people?
They are our AI is cutting edge. It's absolutely fabulous. It's why we exist next to the people. We have fabulous people. We've got...
Where do you find them?
We have had a tremendous amount of people that we have worked with as clients in different Fortune 100 companies that want to come to work for us when they are laid off. That's happened several times, okay? We have a person in Chicago that I don't think she and I are the oldest in the company. She'll probably work as long as I do. But they come to us from all over. But young people, we've actually hired some of the people that were clients, okay?
Once they see the process
What happens with these people, we've had an issue, Michael, in getting a client within a company to share us, okay?
Well, sure, they want to keep you under wraps.
Oh, man. Now, that's not as big of an issue as it used to be. But I can think of quotes where people have said, Louis, you make my job easy. You make my job easy, and you make me more money. I can think of one individual that left a company that went to a company and brought us in immediately. She was there 7-8 years. Then she went to another company for a month and took some people with her and brought us 5 projects the first week.
Yeah.
And then she left there after 30 days and went to a big one. So we get new clients.
All of this makes perfect sense, because if you've got the genie in the bottle, you want to keep it for yourself. And if you've got the inside track on how to really figure out your consumer preferences, you're not going to tell your competition.
No. So to answer your question a little bit more fully on the personnel, they're trained linguists, they're marketing people, they're team players, and we have longevity here. We've got head of IT, I think this is his 20th year. It's the only job he's ever had. Our head of market research, she's been here now, I think, 21 or 22 years. She had a little job before that when she was in college. Shouldn't say little. She had a job when she was in college. And then this is the only job she knows. And we've got many, many people like that that have just stuck around. We have an open environment, and you can come and go as you like. We don't have office hours, but our projects are all time sensitive, so they're going to get the job done.
That's the bottom line. Get the job done. All right, Louis, you just talked a bit about a person that's almost as old as you are, and we're going to go down this path here for just a couple of minutes. When you say that you started in this company back in the 70s.
Well, actually, the company started. I came on board in 2004.
Right. That's a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And how old are you, Louis?
Almost 67.
67. And how long are you going to be working?
Well, I've joked with people that I can't retire until my dad does. And he recently passed away. Still farming at age 94.
Yeah.
So I guess now...
You can think about it.
I can think about it. But, you know, I don't know what I would do.
For you?
I have a blast.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I have a blast.
This takes you out of everything. Now, another side point to this entire conversation, ladies and gentlemen, is something that you don't know about Louis, but we're going to unpack that next. You suffer from a significant disability.
Yes.
And that disability and a presentation that you gave recently won an award for your company because I suspect people saw the grit and determination that you bring to the table. The disability, owners, business, enterprise. And we'll have links to that, ladies and gentlemen, up on the radio blog. Tell us about that.
Disability-owned business enterprise, you must be 51% or more owner of a company and be disabled, okay? What they do is they put you through a pretty arduous process with paperwork like you cannot believe. If you'd print it all off, it'd probably be a foot high. And then you have to have a personal interviews, and then you have to have a visit where they actually come and tour the office. And so we were very fortunate to be designated that a year ago. And we've become very active in that. And there are a very large amount of Fortune 100 and 500 companies that are actually sponsors of Disability IN and the Dobies. They have an annual conference this year. They must have gotten a cheap rate because it's in Orlando in July.
Okay? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
So last year they had 2,500 attendees at that. And Fortune 100 companies, probably, I'm going to guess there were at least 100 different companies of that type there, and they're growing. We just had an announcement come our way this last week that a Fortune 100 company is going on the roadshow, a roadshow trying to get more Dobies, as we are.
More people to apply for this.
More people that they actually want to work with that are already Dobies.
So there are perhaps a great number of individuals who are owned by disabled individuals that could then benefit from this organization?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what does the organization do for those businesses?
They are a conduit for work coming in that Dobies could do.
Okay? Got it. So this is a you can build your business through this.
You could, in fact, there are people that have.
Really?
And if anybody was interested in more information on Dobies, I'd be happy to help them with it and explain what goes on. But you have to be 51% or more owner and disabled.
And we will have, again, ladies and gentlemen, links to Dobie up on our radio blog. This has been a fascinating conversation, particularly as business people, no matter where they happen to be, when they're thinking about their product or their service and the consumer that they're trying to attract, and how important it is, even if you're not a Fortune 100 company, even if you're not a Fortune 500 company, you need to do the research.
Absolutely.
So that you know what it is your customer wants.
Absolutely.
You know, I've always said that there's three reasons why people don't buy a product or service. Number one is you're trying to sell something nobody wants. It's out of date. Number two is that you have the wrong people in the cog. And number three is that you're using the wrong mechanism to share the story. And, you know, if you get those things right, people will buy what it is. Final question for you, Louis. Emotion or fact? What sells a product or a service? Is it an emotional attachment to that product or service, or do you feel, give me the facts, just give me the facts, and I'll buy it?
I think it depends on who you are as a person, okay? I can think of a couple products that I buy personally when I used to. I don't do the shopping anymore because I can't, but I bought it emotionally because I wanted to consume that. I loved the product. I got a certain benefit emotionally, believe it or not, from just drinking that product.
Huh.
It's a tomato juice product. But, I think it's different for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I see lots of people reading the labels of the grocery stores these days.
More so than they used to.
His name is Robert Louis. Ladies and gentlemen, the business is Questor. We will have links to all of that, of course, up on the radio blog. Louis, we have attempted to do this for a number of months, and I thank you for sitting down and having this conversation.
Thank you, Michael.
His name is Robert Louis. Louis to his friends and family, and he is Questor. Questor is a marketing research company using artificial intelligence based in Iowa, but doing business with Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies nationwide. Riveting stuff if you're into advertising and marketing. I know I am, and I thought that was fascinating stuff that we learned from Louis. We will have links to Questor up on our radio blog. For all of us associated with Insight on Business, the News Hour, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing is Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. The music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett from Jam Good Productions. For all those folks And for Louis, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful most of all. Be good to your fellow man. Good day.